Folks, thanks for coming along tonight here in Sydney, and to our people out on Zoom, thanks for joining in. Dai Li makes a welcome return to the Sydney Institute. She was last here some years ago talking about her journey from Vietnam to Australia and arriving here in 1979. But I'll introduce her. She's very well known, was before the last election and particularly since the last federal election. Her first work was for 20 years as an ABC journalist, in better days at the ABC, I must say. She contested for the Liberal Party the seat of Cabramatta in New South Wales in 2008, and as I understand it, got the second largest swing in New South Wales political history. Didn't win, it was a very strong Labor seat, but did remarkably well. She then worked for Barry O'Farrell in opposition when he was Liberal Party opposition leader. Then formed her own small business, has been a member of the Fairfield City Council for some time, and of course since May 2022, the independent member for Fowler in Sydney. And the topic tonight is the cost of living crisis as seen from the electorate of Fowler. Dai Li, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Gerard. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which we gathered this evening, paying respect to the elders past, present and emerging. I also like to acknowledge, obviously, a few as guests that I know, Mr. Kwang Lu, who's a great supporter and from my community out there, and of course, Gerard and Anne Henderson for having me here today. And of course, all the other distinguished guests who've made time to come and listen to what I have to say tonight in regards to the cost of living. Since my election to the 47th Parliament, my focus has been on the cost of living, especially for people who live in Fowler in Western Sydney. My first question in Parliament was to the Prime Minister in August 2022. Highlighting the cost of living crisis for struggling families of Fowler, I asked the PM what will he do about it. The PM's response to me was to encourage me to be part of his Jobs and Skills Summit process, which I was involved in, and also to have local forums, which I also did create in my local community, to look at what the issues are that are impacting our families there. My second question was on September 2nd, 2022, to the Treasurer, asking the government to use the $50 billion windfall, mainly from the Australian mineral and energy export royalties, to extend the fuel excise tax cuts to assist Australia's cost of living crisis, which was hitting everyone and still is, from students to pensioners and families, especially those from low socioeconomic backgrounds and in areas like mine. While the Treasurer back then agreed with me that the government was raking in the billions in export royalties, he didn't answer the question naturally, but just said that the government wanted to ensure, quote, affordable and responsible way that's right for the budget and right for the economy, unquote. Again, last week, I asked about the cost of living related to our young people in regards to the HECS debt. The Prime Minister did not quite get to his answer. He got halfway and sat down. So here we are in 2024, and the government just started to talk about the cost of living and prior to the Dunkley by-election. In addition, the government also changed the stage three tax cuts when they initially said to me that they couldn't do it. Change is good. A lot has changed since I last spoke here in November 2010 at the Sydney Institute. I wasn't even a councillor. And here I am, back again, 14 years later, as the first independent and a woman of refugee background to win the second safest Labor electorate in the country, Fowler. Words cannot express my heartfelt gratefulness to my community in Fowler for placing their trust in me to represent them. And I did not do it on my own. It's teamwork, and I had the community backing. Also, thanks to Gerard and Anne Henderson for continuing to breathe life into this think tank and allowing people like myself to come here and share our experiences and journey thus far. In my maiden speech in September 2022, I talked of the forgotten people in our community and their struggles. From the lack of health funding, which left one of our major hospitals, Fairfield Hospital, without Wi-Fi, to the working Australians who have had to juggle mortgage, pay rent, work in factories, run their small family businesses. At every opportunity in the chamber since my election, I have spoken about the impact of the cost of living crisis the impact of a cost of living crisis has on my community in Fowler and Western Sydney at large. Indisputably, the sharp rise of prices in groceries, fuel, bills, and housing has plagued the minds of many hardworking families and individuals as they struggle to maintain financial security. For those who have not crossed over the tollways to visit Fowler in southwest Sydney, we are home to more than 170,000 constituents with over 150 different nationalities, ethnicities. Fowler encompasses an area from Chipping Norton, Warwick Farm, Liverpool CBD, Mount Pritchard, Bonnerig, Lansvale, Cabramatta, Canley Vale, Canley Heights, and Fairfield East, and Carramar to the east, to Edensor Park, Bosley Park, St John's Park, Greenfield Park, Wakeley and Abbotsbury to the west. While my community and many in Western Sydney are struggling, I often stand in the house and celebrate their amazing, unique and vibrant communities. We are one of the most, if not the most, multicultural and diverse community, with most of our constituents identifying as having heritage ties to Vietnam, China, Iraq, Assyria, Italy, Spain, Serbia, Croatia, Pacific Islanders, and part of the Horn of Africa, just to name a few of the major communities. I'll just give you a snapshot of Fowler. As I said, over 50% of the Fowler's population are born overseas and have parents or two parents born overseas. 16% hailing from Vietnam, 13% identifies having Chinese heritage, and 8.7% hailing from Iraq. We also have the highest population of bilingual speakers in New South Wales, coming to 68.6%, which is more than double the national average. Fowler also has a range of up to 40 different religions and faiths being practiced, with the most popular being Roman Catholicism and Buddhism. Many of our constituents are employed within the manufacturing and healthcare and social assistance industries. We are a labour-intensive community. 40% of workers in Fowler have employment in manufacturing, compared to the national average of 5.9%. Currently, 27,637 small businesses operate in out of Fowler, which makes up 1.15% of all small businesses in Australia. According to the ABS, Fowler's unemployment rate is at a staggering 8.6%, which is almost double Australia's unemployment rate of 4.9%. The ABS reports that in 2021, the personal weekly incomes of those residing in Fowler average at $521, which equates to an annual income of $27,092. This figure is quite low compared to the national average of $805. More than one fifth of households earn less than $650 on their weekly income, and only 16.5% of households total more than $3,000 in weekly income. Much of the Fowler area falls within the first quantile of the index of relative socioeconomic disadvantage, the lowest score, which indicates that the suburbs in Fowler are more disadvantaged and vulnerable to the cost of living pressures compared to other electorates. According to the ABS socioeconomic indexes, Fairfield East, an area in my electorate, ranks as number one as the most disadvantaged local area in Greater Sydney. As I mentioned, concern for the cost of living crisis has been at the forefront of an overwhelming number of my constituents, with a large population in Fowler comprising of low and middle income people. We are bearing the brunt of rising interest rates, high power prices, fuel prices, soaring groceries and food costs, and other necessities. Many of our constituents are doing it tough, struggling to make ends meet and provide for their families and loved ones. We have constituents who visited our office to share their struggles with energy prices, asking for any support. They express frustrations at the government's lack of initiative in responding to the cost of energy increase. A local business owner shared that from June 23rd quarter to April quarter this year, his energy bill went from $7,800 to $11,600. That's a 67% increase in his electricity bill. Our energy prices will not be heading downwards anytime soon. Since 2000, electricity prices have increased by 238% and gas prices have increased by 319%. For comparison, the CPI has increased by only 90% over the same period. Another constituent on Centrelink payment expressed the inability to pay her energy bill in full and had to organise a payment plan to have sufficient funds for other necessary expenses like mortgage repayments and hospital fees. Here we are seeing the adverse effects of people struggling to make ends meet, having to prioritise one basic need over another. More than a quarter of people rank their energy bill amongst their top three stressful expenses. According to NAB, with the petrol prices reaching record high, almost 50% of Australians had to cut back on their car journeys to save on fuels. Yet, 46.1% of workers in Fowler rely on their car as their main method of travel for work. With the lack of public transport in our area, you cannot blame the people for turning to cars because of the decades of failed successive government policies to increase spending to build the necessary infrastructure to support working Australians and families to move around easily and affordably. In the face of rising fuel costs, many constituents are petrol station hopping to find cheap fuel or resort to carpooling when possible in order to get around. This of course extends the amount of travel time, but also serves as an inconvenience for so many. I have called on the government to extend the fuel excise tax cut to alleviate the pains of the cost of living in Western Sydney community and in Fowler. Many individuals are unable to sustain the extent of traveling due to the exponential rise in prices of using their car, and as such, are heavily penalised by a government so that they can make a living. Not only do our families have to face the cost of petrol prices, food and insurance costs are also soaring. Fueling costs of living pressures and food insecurity. ABS data revealed that annual food inflation amounted to 4.5% in December quarter. Many families and even schools are reaching out to us looking for organisations that could support the food crisis. Kids are not going to school because they are not being fed. Against the backdrop of limited competition in the supermarket industry in Australia, claims of price gouging has sparked public outrage. More than $1 billion in profits have been pocketed by major supermarkets in 2022 to 2023. According to a recent report by Woolworths, people are not buying fresh produce anymore because they cannot no longer afford them. This is concerning. A basic healthy diet can cost city-dwelling families who are struggling the most a third of their household income. The fate of food prices continues to be uncertain, making many Australians vulnerable and unable to keep food on the table. The number of tertiary education pursuers in Fowler is 38,000 and is growing. They are burdened by HEX indexation in addition to the rising cost of living. This pressure surrounding their future financial debts can rob them of their focus to provide for their families and further their education. In Fowler, youth and adolescents are disproportionately affected by average unemployment rates between 12.9% and 30.5%, which is three times greater than the national average of 10.3%. Thus, it is imperative for this disadvantaged group to pursue education and skill development that can open prospects of secure and fulfilling career opportunities. I have continually called on the government to freeze the indexation on HECS debt, as I did last week in Parliament and asking the Prime Minister to freeze the debt, as it's discouraging our young people from low socioeconomic areas to pursue higher education due to the cost of furthering their knowledge and education following high school. And even if they do, they are burdened with a debt that they probably can't get out of, which would impact their ability to get a loan for a house in the future. Millennials and Gen Z's mental and social health are at risk as they try to balance studying in the backdrop of rising rent and low paid work. Young people at the forefront of this crisis, surviving instead of living. Many young people are having to eliminate certain items from their budget to survive in these precarious times, such as fresh produce, therapies, and toiletries. Students are forced to sacrifice opportunities for further their studies and quality time with families and friends to take on more shifts at work. The main challenge for young people and students is that they cannot get secure and high-paying employment, especially since wages are lower for both apprenticeship and traineeship positions. The New South Wales Council of Social Services reported that 74% of people aged 25 to 34 experience housing stress, and approximately half of this group were struggling to pay their bills. In the state of the world now, it has become increasingly difficult for young people to independently set up a secure future. And this is going to further the already apparent inequality. This contributes to a vicious cycle where those residing in non-affluent areas such as Fowler are more at risk of financial instability and higher rates of health and social problems, yet they do not have the means or accessibility to facilitate to escape from this fate. Soaring costs are enabling the widening of health inequalities, weakening food security, and diminishing health and social care. Unlike other areas in Greater Sydney, Fowler is home to a great number of immigrants and refugees, of which I'm one. 60.9% of our constituents were born overseas, and 77.3% of families consist of both parents also being born overseas. This is why my focus is to ensure that the aspiration of these families to create a better life for themselves in Australia are met with adequate support. It is my intention that my community is recognised for the resilience they've demonstrated under this cost of living pressure. It is my resolve that this cost of living crisis is not solely felt on the backs of hardworking people trying to provide for their loved ones. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Fowler and other parts of Western Sydney were undeniably hit the hardest by the strict lockdowns that were implemented. In Fowler, we are still experiencing the enduring ramifications that the pandemic had on jobs, small businesses, housing affordability, food security, household energy, and general well-being of people on an elevated level. Coming out of the pandemic, businesses were passing on rising production costs onto customers. Prices continue to be pushed upwards. A recent poll by the Australian Council of Trade Unions found more than 50% of 3,000 people were forced to cut back on spending on essentials or rely on savings to get by. Additionally, it seems that 1 in 4 people are having to skip meals or look for extra employment to make ends meet. Financial stress of housing affordability has also become a pressing issue. Not only are homeowners being hit with rising interest rates, but the reduced availability of rental properties has also further exacerbated rent levels higher than ever before. Reported by Anglicare in 2023, our essential workers, nurses, childcare and aged care workers and teachers on award wages are paying more than a third of their income on rent. There has been a boom in the demand for share houses across Sydney in the midst of our ongoing housing challenges. The escalating concern of the cost of living crisis has made it so that voters are less concerned and are becoming more dismissive of other issues. This was demonstrated in the recent referendum, where a survey from JWS Research revealed that 8 in 10 voters wanted the government to focus on relieving the cost of living, compared to only 1 in 10 feeling the same about The Voice. 60% of voters do not think their incomes have kept up with inflation over the last year, and they cannot continue to sustain their quality of life. From the same survey, people expressed their understanding that our shopping trolleys are half full, petrol is expensive, and all utilities are going up. 52% of voters, so more than half of the electorates, perceive the cost of living as a critical policy test for the Labor government and consider this an issue as the highest priority for their vote. This is an exponential jump from 32% last year. The sharp increase in the cost of living also poses a threat to people's mental health. Financial vulnerability and worries are strongly associated with poorer mental health, which makes it harder for people to make logical financial decisions. According to a report by Beyond Blue, 83% of people reported that the rising cost of living has had a negative effect on their mental health. 1 in 5 of these respondents reported that the impact was extreme. It's a tough time for people grappling with the cost of living pressures, high inflation, continual rising rates, and economic uncertainty. Families are having to make proactive and frugal choices when it comes to everyday essentials. They are having to reduce consumptions in all areas of life to ensure their spending is sustainable. They are driving less, finding cheaper fuel, switching to cheaper produce and groceries, and cutting back on energy. Even with these changes, it might not still be enough for some families to stay afloat in these trying times. So I'm sharing this and standing here to share with you so that you, not that for you to feel sorry for the state of the people in Fowler. The people of Fowler are the most resilient, generous and hardworking people. I stand here to remind us all that they are the backbone of Australia. The teachers, the nurses, retail workers, factory workers who want a fair go. And I'm proud to be able to represent them so that they have a voice in our federal parliament. Thank you.
Many thanks to Dai Lee. I'll come back with a question about the election or someone else may ask later, but what you're essentially talking about, as you know, is a problem of high inflation, which is affecting all sorts of areas. And I guess predominantly, you mentioned early on, energy prices. Mm. So you came up with the proposition to the Prime Minister about what might happen in relation to petrol. Mm. What would you say about the general issue? Because as we move towards renewables, prices seem to be going up, not down, and that looks like it's going to continue. So what could you suggest?
I called on the Prime Minister and the government since last year. As I said, since I set foot in the 47th Parliament in the chamber, I have constantly spoken about cost of living, the energy prices, the petrol fuel, the petrol prices as well. And I did call, and along with the crossbenchers, we called for the changes to the statutory tax cuts, which the government this year did. And I'm sure many of you in this room might not agree to that. But I know that generally speaking, according to the government, you know, the statutory tax cuts is really, he's giving a tax cut to everybody, every Australian. Those who are on low income gets about $15 a week. More, which I don't think it's going to be much. It can't cover the cost of energy prices or any other rising costs. But, you know, it showed that they were, this year at least, were listening. So stage three tax cuts is part of one of the first thing. But I also was still saying to him that we need something more immediate. And I will still stand by the fuel excise tax cuts because under the previous government, and I said this in Parliament as well, I said if the Liberal government can consider providing an excise fuel tax cuts, why wouldn't a Labor government do the same, especially when they were raking in $50 billion from, you know, minerals and, you know, royalties, and they were getting excise you know, tax from fuel. So the $3 billion would at least a temporary measure, at least from my perspective. But I think the transition to energy, to renewable, is costing a lot, and it's something that we need to really take the community along that journey. And in I don't know where many of your audience are living in, whether you've still got high debt or you have your own, you've got no mortgage and you've got nothing to worry about. But in Western Sydney, and in particular in my Vale electorate, the majority of people are still driving normal cars. They kind of afford to get electric cars. So because they use the pump to fill up their cars, it will help many working Australians, from my perspective, to provide them with some kind of relief right now. And the fuel excise tax cut will be the most easiest way forward at the moment. That's one solution. And energy, how do we, with some of the policies that are being pushed through at the moment, which is just focusing on, I understand renewable and the zero net emission, but that is pushing so much of the prices up in terms of energy, electricity bills and gas. It's really having a huge impact on a community like Fowler, I'm not going to turn off my gas. I don't know about you, but I know that a lot of my small business out in Fowler rely on gas for cooking, and there's no way I'll support for a no gas policy. So that is a challenge in Parliament, because there's people who are calling for no gas and no coal. I think any policies, as we acknowledge that we need to do something in terms of coal and in terms of carbon, the emission, but we have to do it in such a way that is affordable for working Australians. That's all I'm asking for. In terms of coal, I mean, we've had meetings with, a lot of the unions who represent the coal miners who are coming into Parliament telling us they've got no jobs now because the companies that are producing coals are not prepared to invest because they don't know where the policy, the government's policy is heading. So then they're not even retraining those coal miners into, the future of renewable jobs, because they don't know what it's going to look like. So there are all of these issues that I think there has to be a proper transition policy in terms of transitioning people out of coal into renewable. We have to do it such a way that there are diversity of resources so that you can't just rely on one and just cut off the rest, because you have to give people, I believe in choices, so people have to be given choices to choose. And so I don't know if I answered the question there, Gerard, but I think that for me immediately is the petrol fuel tax cuts. The other one is the indexation of HECS, because a lot of our young people will not be able to afford to buy their first home because of the huge amount of debt that they have. I mean, I've got so many young people working with me. They've got $60,000 in HECS debt. You can't go to a loan, somebody to get a bank or a broker to get a loan, even with their Help to Buy bill. And with the Help to Buy bill last week, I tried to make the amendment whereby I said, you've got to take into consideration the market, because there is a salary limit, which is $90,000 for a single. Now, to get and whereby the government owns 40%, but on $90,000 a year, that person with all of their other essentials, they're left with about about $852 a month. That's without the mortgage. There's no way they're going to get a loan from a broker for $950,000 to buy their first home. So it just doesn't make sense with the figures that the government has in the Help to Buy. And with students who've got those extra debt, $60,000, forget it. You're cutting the young people out of the market of buying their first home. So the HEX indexation, many of you in this room probably had free education, from my time, I started to pay for university fees and HEX debt, HEX. So, but the younger generation, they're carrying a bigger burden of HEX debt. So HEX indexation, excise fuel cut, and there has to be some other rebate for other, yeah.
Just a quick clarification. By HEX indexation, what do you mean?
So if you go to university, Is I think the rename it Help, Hex Help. You have to pay to go to uni nowadays, and sometimes it can cost, I don't know, up to, you know, $300,000 for a degree. Depends on the course that you do. So if you don't have an upfront the money to pay your course for your degree, then that's a debt. The Commonwealth loan you the money to pay for university study, but then you have that debt, which then is indexed. I think at the moment it's 7%. So it's indexed, it's the CPI.
So you're saying it should drop?
It should drop or freeze it, that's right. I mean, I asked the government to take it back to, I think, 3.9%, which was, I think, a few years ago, because the indexation has gone from 3.9% to 7%.
Yeah. Thank you, Dai Le. Just maybe a peripheral question. Have you any idea or any figures to show the number of companies and businesses which have gone out of business in the last 12 or 18 months in Fowler?
I don't have the numbers, but I know that we can find out for you. But, you see a lot of businesses closing. You can see the shops closing. But the great thing, I don't know what other electorates are like, but in my electorate, one closes down, another will open up. But then in 12 months' time, they close again. So there's that whole turnaround constantly. So, yeah. It's surprisingly quite a vibrant, economically vibrant community if you haven't been there. When you come out there on a weekend, you'll see how busy the small businesses are. But they are family. It's, like I said, over 27,000 small businesses, majority of them are run by family. So they got their daughters, their nieces, their sisters, they're just working. A lot of them are not being paid, so therefore that's probably how they can cover the cost of running their small business. But it's a real hard, I know a lot of families said that they're just trying to run a small business, raise their kids, looking after family, and it's a struggle.
Hi, Dave. Today there was a piece in The Australian, I think, about the scheme for governments sharing the cost of home buying. And it turns out that it's useless in New South Wales or Sydney, because I think the house can't be over $675,000.
So there's a limit in New South Wales to buy a house, that they cap the house at $950,000.
Okay, well, the article said it had to be $675,000. And they actually photographed the three houses that anyone could buy in Sydney at that price.
Yeah. You can't even get it for $950,000, so by the way.
So what about the state government schemes? I mean, has the state government been a little bit more reasonable about what it's offering, because it's in New South Wales or in Sydney especially?
So my understanding that the Help to Buy bill, which the government pushed through last week, was actually, they just pushed through the bill to give the Commonwealth money, the Commonwealth to give the money to the state to run, to continue to run their housing scheme. My understanding as well is that in New South Wales, the take-up of that scheme hasn't been as successful as they'd hope. I think it's about 100 people have taken up the scheme only. So there are quite a few issues. It's around the eligibility and the criteria around who can apply. And I said the $90,000 for single and $120,000 for couples, just not going to be... that's where my amendment was to change that. But yes, 40% under the scheme, which is in New South Wales, the government can own 30 to 40% of that property. So they come in as a, I suppose, guarantor and to own your property. And of course, who wants the government to own, 30 to 40% of your property? Look, but if you're desperate and you want to buy, then maybe that is an option, the shared equity. So that's, sure, it's great if it's available. However, will the policy work? And at New South Wales, it doesn't seem to have had that huge uptake. We don't know why, because I did not look at the state scheme to see why it had failed. Well, why it hasn't been that successful. So giving the state more money without any criteria in the federal government Help to Buy bill, I don't know how that would result. What the outcome would be.
Thank you, Di, for your presentation and speech. That was great.
Thanks, Colin.
I just wanted to ask you, you spoke about energy being obviously one of the top three issues that your constituents raise, particularly around cost of living. Where does your what's your position or your view in relation to the coalition's position around the small nuclear modular reactors? I know they've come out today in The Australian talking about that. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think energy sources, I'd like to look at all of the various energy sources that people are talking about, as opposed to what is that would yield, that would bring down energy prices. This is the outcome that I want to achieve. But secondly, that is safe and reliable. So that's something that safe, reliable and affordable and accessible. So, you know, what is the most quickest way to get energy? You know, is it, we have solar panels in Australia. We invented it, but then it went outside and went overseas and come back and it's now somebody owns it. But we're now having solar panels everywhere. I mean, I've got solar panels at home, right? So that's safe. That is, we know that, and it's something that can easily put on people's roof. In terms of the nuclear, nuclear thing, I don't know. I mean, I need to look into it a bit more and understand it a bit more, because it is quite, to be honest with you, it's quite contentious. So, you know, and it's no point offering the public something that we don't have a full understanding what we'll do in the future.
Oh yeah, just another question on housing. I know there's been some suggestions from, I think, the Liberal Party about being able to take money out of superannuation accounts to use towards mortgages. Is that something that you would support?
Oh, absolutely. Look, it's one of the things that we, that Allegra Spender and I and some of the crossbenchers have spoken about, and we had a roundtable on tax, is looking at what are the options in terms of our tax system is so archaic. And we've been told that whenever somebody from the government or opposition bring out tax over the decades, they'll lose the government or some, they'll lose government of the day. So, but here we are pushing for talking about tax reform, because that would include, you know, what can people do with superannuation? But then you also have to ensure that there is, the superannuation is there, so that when you, as you get older, you've got something to then, you know, that you can tap into as well, because you can't rely on government to look after you at the end of the day.
Right. Di, as an independent, you do speak for your community, but I'm old enough to remember that we've been through this story of inflation before. We had it with Whitlam. We had it with Whitlam, we had it with Fraser, we've had it with others. And the only, and we, it went back to 1951, 52. And one of the things that we know does cure it is cutting government spending. But from your perspective, you want the government to do more of giving rather than cutting. So when you go to the Prime Minister and you talk to the Prime Minister or the Treasurer, what are they saying is their big plan, rather than one electorate, to curb inflation? Because when you describe it, it's how I feel. The inflation that is hitting ordinary people is not reflected in the CPI figures. For some reason, those huge charges that are happening in energy and petrol, whatever, don't come in when they put everything together. How do they plan to bring that down?
I asked that question. He sits down and I said, what are you going to do about cost of living? The Prime Minister sits down, or sat down last week. Look, you know, often the general response is, you know, we're trying to make sure that, you know, it's within budget in a national, you know, it's a very broad motherhood statement. They're not going to share with me what their plans are. I think the one of the issues, I think, is around the costs in our supply chain in everything. And, you know, I acknowledge that it's going to be a challenge for any government, how to then ensure that, you know, it's going to flow down. For instance, I what was it? I went and try and get some washing powder on the weekend, and 2 kilos. I use Omo. 2 kilos of Omo is $28. So I don't know if you guys go shopping use Omo or not, but I went. I use Omo, so I thought, oh my god, $28 for 2 kilos. I remember a few years ago, prior to COVID, it was probably about $18, right? And everything has gone up in if you go to the supermarket. But that's because for supermarket chains, I suppose they have to, with the changes to the legislation around wage rise increase, which we need the increase in salary for, you know, frontline workers, that means somebody has to pay. So they the supermarket giants aren't just going to take it. They have to pass it on. So really, I just find, oh my God, are we better off? And that's what I said to the government. It's great that you, through the closing the loophole bill, that you've increased wages, but then everything else has also increased. So at the end of the day, actually there's nothing. Our individuals have not actually pocketed any more money than before. So, yeah.
Thanks, Di. Casting your mind forward to the next election, what do you think your own constituents will say about when they're voting again, about voting for an independent such as yourself or one of the major parties? What are you going to say to them, or what do you think they would say back on voting day about voting for an independent rather than voting for one of the major parties?
I don't know what they'll say in Fowler or in Western Sydney, but I know that in my community, people have said that for the first time they've heard somebody talking about the community at a federal level, as well as on national media, and I'm constantly shining the spotlight on my community. So they said they're seeing, you know, lifting us up for the first time. Because really, if you think back, Cabramatta, Fowler have been in the news for bad things over the decades, and we've never been in the news for anything else. But I think for the first time, they're seeing somebody speaking for them, fighting for them, and demanding things such as HEX or excise fuel tax cuts, housing. I'm working at a local level to try and resolve some of those housing shortages and trying to get people to work together to build more homes. There's people talking about that I'm there for them and I'm seen. So, you know, I just go out there and I work. And they don't talk, I'm going to vote for you. Not, it's, I don't know, it's not something that we discuss. You know, it's just you going out there, you do what you have to do to be the voice and to give voice. And that's what I focus on.
Who's interested in the election that you won? I mean, you became, the questioner says you became a bit of a giant killer. I mean, you took on Christina Keneally and won. So why did you decide to do it and how did you do it?
As I said, I didn't do it by myself. I think I did it with the community and of course with the backing of the local mayor. And we did that because we felt, we couldn't believe that that the Labor Party would put Christina Keneally into a safe Labor seat, you know, low socioeconomic, somebody from Scotland Island to come and represent us. And I just thought that was like, you know, how could they think that way? And that to me was an indication how much the Labor Party took our community for granted. And I thought, the seat was the second safest in the country, second safest Labor. Can I do this? And, you know, to be honest, it wasn't an easy climb because, you know, people say that she's a high profile, a former premier. Who am I to really contest against this high profile? The best I thought was that if we can cause a swing, if we cause a swing, that would be a big thing. And I remember saying, we either win it by 1% or bring it down to 1%. Because I brought Cabramatta down to 1.5% at the state election. So I thought, well, maybe a similar thing. And I won it by, it's a marginal seat, 1.5%, at a time when there was a margin swing towards Labor at the time, I think about 4% or something, in some seats, more than in others, but there was a general swing towards Labor when I won it. So we'll see where the next 12 months will be with the tide going back the other way.
I've got another question here, because a comment that was made earlier when I introduced you, which is, how come the Liberals let you go? I mean, what were they on?
I've got no idea, Jared, but obviously those who've been part of the Liberal Party would know party politics, and I wasn't made out to be in party politics, really, and I really wanted to be a voice for my community and wanted to represent my community, and that's what I did. And when they started to play games, I said, look, I was too old to that. You know, if I started as a young Labor, young Liberal, that's different. But when you get to a certain age, you think, is this what it's about? No, I wasn't prepared to play the game. And you have to be prepared to play the game when you're part of a party. And I wasn't. Maybe that's the bad thing, I don't know. But that's what happened. And they just said, off you go. So I went, off I went.
We're getting close to the end. Now, tell us a bit about yourself. As I mentioned when I introduced you, you spoke here about your journey to Australia. But, I mean, we think of many people think of Vietnamese who came here in the late 70s, early 80s as boat people, but very few came by boat. So you came on Qantas flight with a valid visa. So tell us about what happened.
Well, we did escape by boat. So boat people means that we used the boat to leave, and, you know, Mr. Quang Lu, he would probably attest as well. You know, we are boat people in a sense that we all fled Vietnam at the end of the war when the communists came into Saigon, my birth country, my birthplace. And, you know, we escaped on a boat, spent days on a boat. Some people spent weeks, and then we end up in refugee camps. So I was in the refugee camp in the Philippines, first of all, and then my dearly beloved late mother decided on a second journey, which took us to Hong Kong. So I spent another year in Hong Kong camp. So I had the luxury of experiencing two camps in two countries, the Philippines and Hong Kong, and before I got accepted to come to Australia. The great story about why my mother chose Australia was we were accepted to go to the United States. And I remember one day, this is in Hong Kong, I was coming back from work in a factory, and my mother met me out at the gate, and she said, oh, I know that you wanted to go to America. I was 10, by the way, a 10-year-old. You have having a discussion with a 10-year-old. She goes, however, I've decided not to go except to go to the United States. And here I'm thinking, oh my God, I want to go out of this camp. But it's in my head. I didn't talk to her. And she said, but I've accepted to apply to go to an island. It's called Úc Đại Lợi. So that's Australia. It's in Vietnamese, it's called Úc Đại Lợi. And she said, it has the best education system in the world, and it's an island. It's surrounded by ocean. We're far away from everything. And who am I? I don't know where Australia, Úc Đại Lợi, was. I had no idea what this island was, but it was an island with the best education system. So my mother said, we'll see if this island people will process our application. And so we waited a few more months, and then we were accepted by the Australian government. At the time, it was under Malcolm Fraser, and we got processed in the camp, living in camp life. Those who haven't been living in a camp life is very luxury, with double bed bunks and, you know, in a kind of tin shed with thousands of people. And we got accepted, and we flew by Cathay Pacific to arrive here in Australia in December 1979.
Well, many thanks to Dali tonight. I should say that Quang Lu's here as well, who spoke. We've been friends since 74, and a big encounter at La Trobe University, where I was an academic, and you've spoken here about that, and that's in the Sydney papers. And Dali too has spoken here. And Anne and I have always been great supporters of the South Vietnamese community, so it's great to have you back and to tell us a bit about your community, but with respect to a wider problem experienced by everyone who lives either in or outside of Fowler. Most people live in or outside of Fowler at the cost of living. So well done tonight, and we'll have you back sometime in the future. But